The BS Report is presented by Subway. Football season is over. Footlong season is just beginning. For a limited time, get any piled high regular footlong for just $5. Any footlong, just $5. Hurry in, Subway. Eat fresh. Eat fresh. The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
I hate talking NFL during the week of March Madness, but holy crap, this has been a weird offseason. We had to bring back our man Mike Lombardi from NationalFootballPost.com on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Two huge stories happening right now, and I really can't figure out either one. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, Bill. Well, you know, I think this thing goes all the way back in Denver to Matt Cassel, obviously, and, you know, Denver's inability actually to work the Cassel trade out. I think that's where the whole origin of the problem starts.
Do we have all the information now about what happened? Because the last time I talked to you, it was unclear if Denver just got in too late or somebody fell asleep at the wheel or what happened. Do we know what happened now?
I think we have a good handle on it right now. What happened was, at the combine, New England did due diligence, and they talked to Tampa. They talked to Detroit to see if they were interested in Cassel. Well, you know, come to find out, both teams said they weren't interested at the time, and New England wanted to proceed along trying to make a trade because they wanted to get the 14.6 off their books. Well, a day later, you know, both Tampa and Detroit say, hey, by the way, we're interested in Cassel, which, you know, New England's a fairly smart team, shrewd. They said, wait a minute, something's wrong here. This doesn't seem right to me. Something's going on. Obviously, Denver was trying to go around New England to make the deal. And at the end of the day, because instead of dealing with New England directly, I think Denver basically cost themselves the opportunity because they had other things they had to do, and New England was going to trade Cassel to get them off their books, to pick up the cap room, and to proceed along with their free agency. So Denver, by not dealing directly with New England, might have cost them Cassel.
So Detroit and Tampa say, no, we're not interested in Cassel. Denver, independently of whatever New England is working on, says, I wonder what we can get for Cutler, and then we'll go try to get Cassel. But they don't check with New England first.
Right, because they were they were trying to sign two New England players. You know, the Lonnie Paxton signing was probably keeping everything at bay because, you know, to get that long snapper on your team, it's the most critical factor of your offseason. So
got
to
bang that one out.
You got to get that done, and you've got to do that in a clandestine operation. So, you know, you don't want anybody knowing that's what you're doing. So I think that's what happened, and I think there's a little bit of an experience in the Denver front office, and I think, you know, Belichick was going to make a deal with somebody who was going to take the contract at 14.6 without having to deal with a renegotiation and tying up his cap as he gets into free agency. So Kansas City offered him two avenues. They offered him great cap room, and they offered him the 34th pick, and that's what he did.
But here's what I don't get. McDaniels and Belichick like each other.
Right.
Like, they were on the same page, and McDaniels, when he left, he was one of the first guys that Belichick, who left the team, who Belichick actually went out of his way to talk about how happy he was and he's going to do great and all that. I don't understand why they didn't have one phone call at some point in April, like, hey, between us, what do you think you're going to do with Cassel?
Yeah, you would think that would have happened. But, you know, obviously when you change sides, you know, your affection for the person that you once worked with becomes more of a business relationship because you're ultimately competing against the same for the same trophy. So,
yeah, but isn't there at least a little bit of a trust in place between them where he could, if he's trying to figure out McDaniels, what, you know, this grand master plan, couldn't he trust Belichick enough to say, hey, you know, what do you think of this?
I would think he would have. I think the only way to deal with Belichick is to deal with him directly. You're not going to outsmart him, so you might as well figure out a way to find out where he's coming from and then work within the parameters of where he is. He wanted to get rid of – he did not want to have to – once Matt Cassel signed the tender, then Belichick held all the options in terms of trade.
Yeah.
Because he didn't need approval from that. Had Cassel not signed, then this thing could have been tied up for a long, long time, and then the agents get involved, and now I need a new contract. Clearly, Kansas City takes this deal, puts them on their cap. It's a transaction that basically would be no different than trading for a fourth round pick. One day it's over.
Here's the second part that I don't get. What would possess Denver to trade Cutler? That's the part that I don't get. Like, the Bronco fans like him. He's a good young quarterback. It's not like he's making a crazy amount of money.
Right.
That's
why you're the vice president of common sense, because your common sense instincts tell you why not go with Cutler, where a lot of people in sports want to have their people around them, people they're familiar with. Why would Eric Mangini, who watched Eric Barton play 16 games and knows he can't really run, sign him to come to Cleveland? Because he knows him. Hmm. And familiarity is probably the cornerstone of personnel decisions in almost every league. And that really is the answer here, you know.
Yeah, but I get all that. But if I'm like one of McDaniels, I'm sure McDaniels has a couple of confidants. So if he's telling, like, say I'm one of his buddies from college, and he's telling me this whole plan, my reaction would have been, are you sure this is how you want to start your Denver Bronco coaching career, by trading this guy that everybody in Denver likes? This is really going to be your first move?
Yeah, I think that's a very prudent question, and obviously – the reason the Denver job was the most attractive job of all the jobs out there was because of Cutler.
Right.
And now, as we look back, Cutler is the reason is the guy he's trying to move. Whereas all the other jobs, you know, even including Seattle with Matt Hasselbeck, and let's throw Indianapolis out because they already had, you know, their coach in place, there was no other quarterback. I mean, how often do you find a position as a new young head coach that you got a Pro Bowl quarterback, a guy who threw 25 touchdown passes and for over 4,000 yards? And I know, look, there were some chinks in the armor offensively at times with Denver offense, even though they moved the ball and they were very good. But at the end of the day,
they had no running game.
Yeah, at the end of the day, he's really a fabulous quarterback. And does he need to be coached? Yeah, I think Mike Tomlin proved that with Big Ben. He said, hey, look, we're either not turning the ball over or you're not going to play. And Ben stopped turning the ball over. So all players need to be coached.
I thought the season Cutler had last year was really good because, you know, they were down in their seventh-string running back. They're signing Tatum Bell 3-4 months after he was accused of stealing somebody else's suitcase. That's how desperate they were. I mean, you give him a real running back and a better team, and I just think he's going to be better. The other part I don't get, you know, this would all make sense to me if Cutler was making, you know, had a giant cap figure or something, and you could bring Castle in for half the price, maybe turn the 12th pick into the 19th pick, then use the extra cap space to sign like two more guys. But it was this, whatever they were trying to do, that wouldn't have even been the case. It would have been like a lateral move with the quarterbacks, right?
Yeah, and you know, it would have increased, you know, obviously Cutler's cap number is relatively inexpensive for the next 3 years.
Yeah.
And taking on Castle's new deal would have been astronomical cash flow out the window, and you would have spent a lot of money to improve your team by how much? Or if you really actually would have improved it at all.
Or gone backwards.
What's the cost value added into this deal? It didn't really make a lot of sense. So, you know, and one of the things that I've had this conversation with people in the league, you know, the hard thing about Castle when they franchised him was, on the surface, it looked like, geez, the number one guy you would have traded him to doesn't need a quarterback. And then all this comes up.
Hmm.
You know, now, you know, if McDaniels takes the Lions job, now all of this makes sense. You trade the 20th pick, you get Matt Castle, sign him to a 5-year deal. Things are off to the races. But again, that made too much sense. I think Jim Schwartz is a fabulous coach, but if I would have been a vice president or a GM in Detroit, I think I would have gone after Matt. I would have gone after McDaniel because it would have been a 2-for-1 special.
Yeah, and then, you know, when he took the Denver job, I thought, oh, that makes sense. He's got Cutler. And then it turns out he doesn't want him. So obviously they have to trade him, though. I don't think there's any going back.
Well, I hearken back to, you know, being the NBA fan that you are and I am, I hearken back to the Allen Iverson deal where Matt Geiger wouldn't release his trade kicker at 15%. He wasn't making enough money. He wasn't robbing him enough in Philadelphia.
Right.
Geiger wanted a 15% increase over his deal to go to Detroit. Larry couldn't make the deal. Iverson comes back to Philadelphia. They go to the championship, ultimately losing to the Lakers. So anything can be repaired. If that can be repaired, then anything can be repaired.
And we saw that also happen with Robert Horry with the Rockets. And then just recently, Tyson Chandler goes back to New Orleans, and that team took off. The one difference is that Cutler seems to have taken this really, really, really personally. And I'm not sure I can totally blame him either, because it's one of the all-time blindsides. I don't think anybody could have predicted this.
Yeah, I think you have to understand where Cutler's coming from. I mean, you know, had they hired, let's say, Jim Schwartz to be the head coach at Denver, because the owner comes out and says, hey, look, the owner tells Cutler, you know, I want to keep everything in place offensively. I've made this move because it's time for a change, but I don't want to change what we're doing offensively. Makes sense. Jeremy Bates, great young coach, had a great season with them. Things were really progressing well. You know, so he knows the owner's in him, and then all of a sudden, everything after what the owner has told him has been completely different and completely against everything that he was told.
Is it possible that when this thing started to self-combust a little bit, that another team that was a potential destination to him reached out through a third party and said, hey, you know, you've got a place here if you want it, and now Cutler has that in the back of his mind?
You know, but Cutler's one of those players that, you know, let's go through it. San Francisco, you know he could go there. Tampa, Jim Bates is the defensive coordinator. His son coached Cutler. So he was at Denver 1 year. He knows Cutler intimately. So you know Tampa, they want to get a new face on the franchise. You know they're interested. Cleveland, you know, and I've been writing about this for the last few days. Cleveland's interested. You know, nobody's buying Brady Quinn or Derek Anderson in Cleveland. It's a new regime. So, you know, they're interested. You know,
Jets.
Minnesota says they're not interested, which makes all the sense in the world. You know, that
yeah.
does. You know, they would say they're not interested. That makes sense to me.
They got Sage. They're all set. They got Sage Rosenfels.
Mary and Wine. They have him. So, you know, I mean, Cutler's one of these players that, you know, there's a lot of teams that are going to should be interested.
Especially what about the Jets?
The Jets, and I have this reliably reported to me, the Jets were considering drafting Cutler when he came out, not with the fourth pick. They had the 20th pick, the pick they ended up taking Nick Mangold down in the bottom of the first round. I think they had the 27th pick somewhere around there. They weren't going to try to trade up to get Cutler. They loved Cutler. They got talked out of Cutler late by an outside consultant, but they liked Cutler. Now, the Jets come out initially and say they're not interested, and then, of course, 10 days later, the Jets are doing their due diligence. So there always remains to be seen. And, of course, Buzz Cook represents Cutler, and he represented Favre. So this is going to be an ongoing saga.
Last Cutler question. Is he worth like a top five pick? Like, if you're the Niners, do you trade that, whatever, I forget what pick they have, but do you trade that for Cutler?
Based on this draft, yes, because there's really, this draft has about three or four marquee players, and then after that, that's going to be it. And then everybody else is just, and to get a quarterback, you cannot overpay for a great quarterback. You just can't
I was just going to say, if I'm the Niners, I overpay. I give Denver an offer that they cannot turn down. And their
overpay.
Fans get excited. Cutler has the eye of the tiger on a new team. He's in a bad division. He's got Frank Gore with them. Kind of, you know, the Singletary. I don't know. That's not a bad situation for him.
This year proved that the NFL is about having a great quarterback. And if you don't have one, you're not going to win.
All right, let's talk about Peppers. I think I threw this out at you like 4 weeks ago.
And I dismissed it at that time. And I think, you know, and I have all the respect for Vic and where he got his information, but I think that there's a couple factors you have to weigh in. And we talked about it 4 weeks ago. You know, Julius Peppers makes $17 million on a tender.
Yeah.
He's not signed that. Okay. Unlike Castle, he's untradeable until he signs his tender. Next year, if he gets his increase, he goes up to $20 million. He's due to make $37 million for the next 2 years. Now, for him to agree to a trade to, say, New England, he would have to take a dramatic pay cut because no one on New England is going to make more than Brady. Now, Brady made 5 years, 6 years, $60 million back a while when he first did it. Then they've redone the contract, and you can calculate it. Maybe it's a 12.5 now per year. But somewhere around $12 million is where Brady is. You saw where Randy Moss signed less than that. Everybody's going to make less than Tom Brady. That's who they are. That's the structure of their organization. And so if Peppers wants to play in New England, it's going to be that he agrees to take a lot less money.
So you're saying Belichick still adheres to the old Red Auerbach rule of I will never pay anyone more than my best guy.
Look at the deals that he's gotten. You know, he was interested in Lee Bodden. Lee Bodden wanted $5 million a year for a five-year deal, couldn't get it. He signed him for a modest $2.5 million. You know, Joey Galloway was out shopping. He got signed him for a modest million. I mean, all these deals he's done this offseason, including coming right out of the box, have been all modest within his pay scale deals. He's got bigger fish to fry in terms of money next year when Will Folk's deal comes up and Logan Mankin's deal comes up and those players. That's where he's going to have to save some money and be very careful about managing his money.
So you think this is not going to happen?
I think it's unlikely to happen. I would never say never in the NFL, especially as crazy as this offseason has been. However, the money, like Watergate, follow the money, and the money tells me this can't happen.
Unless you left out one crucial component. What happens if they just cut Seymour?
Well, you know, they could certainly do that, and that would pick up some money, but that doesn't, you know, the key is going to be, will Julius Peppers take way less than an Albert Haynesworth deal? And, you know, and I know, and Peppers has always said he's never wanted to just be a Carolina kid. He's never wanted to play high school, college, and pro in one state. So he does have ambitions to leave, and I think that's what motivates it. However, you know, it would eat up a large portion of their cash in New England and their cap, and I don't know how they're going to would get around that with other players.
I'm looking at 2009 cap savings if cut or traded. According to Miguel, who has a site called PatsCap.com, he says that would be a $6 million cap hit if they cut Seymour, but they'd save 3.4. So that doesn't make any sense.
No, you see, so the things don't add up. Now, the 14.5 sacks that Peppers got last year, his athleticism, his talent, all fit what New England needs. The worst team in the league last year on first down pass defense, one of the worst teams in the league on third down, third and 10 pass defense last year. The Patriots are not good at rushing the passer. I know everybody thinks they just threw Vrabel in the deal, and maybe Mike will make a great comeback. But last year, Mike couldn't get to the passer. That exposed a lot of problems. You look at what they've done this offseason with Lee Bodden and Sean Springs. They've got an inside corner. They've got an outside corner. You know, they've signed Joey Galloway to give him an outside receiver to play against away from the roll coverage. If Joey Galloway stays healthy, he'll be a fantasy player's delight next year because he'll get single coverage over there the whole year.
Yeah, well, you talked about Vrabel. I think that was really the second half of the 2007 season plus 2008. Their linebackers just got slow. They had to do something.
And they're not going to win Brewski. And that's where the Peppers deal makes sense.
Yeah, but they're, as you said, it's money-wise, it just doesn't add up. And it doesn't make sense to anything that this team has done for the last 8 years. As excited as it would make me, it would be just completely different from as you mentioned, the Brady part, and then the part where they need money to pay for Mankins and Wolfork next year. I just don't see it. I think this is, I think maybe they discussed it, but I just don't see them pulling this off. And I don't see Peppers just saying, yeah, I'll take 50% what I'm worth.
Right. And that's ultimately the problem. Now, again, when Josh McDaniels gets a job in Denver, I say, well, Castle can't go there. So, you know, it's hard to say never because we've seen what's happened and how things change dramatically in the NFL.
Are we sure Peppers is that good?
Well, that's the other issue. You know, some people in Carolina believe the year he had 2 years ago, I think where he had two sacks, was the real Peppers, as this year he had 14.5. Look, Peppers is extremely athletic. He's extremely talented, and he can do a lot of different things. And this is the other factor that nobody talks about, is the one thing you don't want to do in any pro sport is take a projection and pay a projection.
Yeah.
And that's way too much risk. That's Willenda problems. You're on the high wire on that one. You know, you say, I'm going to pay Peppers $10 million a year, and oh, by the way, he's playing a new position. That's a little scary for me.
I like Peppers, but I have seen more than a few Panthers games where I forgot he was in the field. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's one of those guys. He's a little bit hit or miss, and if I'm going to pay somebody that much money, I don't want hit or miss. Haynesworth, say what you want about Haynesworth, but you knew he was on the field last year.
Yes. You knew he was on the field, and you had to double him. And where Haynesworth is really, where people miss the boat on Haynesworth a little bit is that he's more inclined, Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, he's a coach's nightmare. Nobody wants to, you know, how are we going to block him? Everything you do is centered around how we're going to handle Albert Haynesworth. I think Jason Taylor has a better chance to end up in New England than I would think J- Julius Peppers.
And that's a much more logical move to me. He's the type of Patriot that they go and get. Like, the guy kind of near the end of his career, but might have two good years left. Smart, you know, team guy. The only thing I worry about, it seems like he kind of went a little nuts after the Dancing with the Stars thing.
Yeah.
So he's like, hey, is there an S. Week photographer around? Hey, here, I'll pose for a picture.
If you watch his tape last year, before he got injured, it was not very impressive. Mm. And when you have that situation, bad tape, marquee player, before the injury, you know, the players don't realize they're not the same player.
Yeah.
And so this is going to take a lot of talking and time to say, you know what, you really didn't play good last year. It's tough for me to pay you the going rate. You're going to have to take a lot less. And he might have miscalculated that deal in Washington.
And the other part that worries me is that for whatever reason, he just always killed the Patriots. And it scares me to be looking at a guy that always kills you because it's a distorted sense of what his actual value is. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know.
I've lived that. I mean, the Sixers traded away Brad Daugherty because Roy Hinson always killed him.
Wow, a Roy Hinson reference.
Yeah. I mean, so I you know, I've lived that my whole life, you know, so I know exactly what you mean.
You know, you mentioned the Haynesworth thing and how Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, the other team is figuring out how do we stop this guy. And what scares me about the Pats as a fan is I'm not sure we have a guy on the defense like that.
No, you
haven't. Nor have we for a while.
But what scares people Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday is not as much of the players as it is the scheme and how they utilize
yes.
that scheme. And that drives people crazy. You could say the same thing for Philadelphia. There's not one player in Philly's front seven that you sit in a meeting and say, oh, how are we going to handle him? However, Jim Johnson and that unique scheme that he runs causes you a lot of nights where you say, how are we going to treat this? If we get to this, oh, no, we can't handle that. And he's a problem. And that's where they get you a little bit. And, you know, there was a time when Seymour, you know, let's face it, Seymour has not played well the last few years. But, you know, he doesn't have a guy on his outside that's really bringing the heat like he used to bring.
I don't know if Seymour has been even 70% as good as people seem to think he is.
Yeah, that I agree with, Bill. But I will say that the other players around Seymour haven't been as good on the outside. And we know when you have a great rusher on the outside, the inside becomes a lot easier to penetrate.
Yeah, if you're slow on the sides and your linebackers can't cover a ton of ground, that's trouble. But maybe Thomas will be that guy. Who was your favorite 2009 offseason so far? Which team?
You know, and people are going to accuse me for being a Belichickian fan, but I love what New England has done because what they've done is they can go play a game tomorrow and their team's better from last year. And they haven't even hit the draft yet. They have three number twos. They have a middle first and they have two threes. So I think what New England has done has been really, really good. You know, Joey Galloway to me, Sean Springs, both those guys, big if here. If they're healthy, they're going to contribute tremendously to their football team. Then the other team, I think the Giants have just been spectacular. Three starters on defense. They strengthen the strength, which I love to do. I think that's the key thing to do in sports. Don't trade a 20-game pitcher because you need hitting, and then 6 weeks into the baseball season, you know, they say, boy, we really need a pitcher. Mm. I believe you build on strength, and the Giants built on strength. I mean, the Bears can't rush the passer, and they had no interest in Rocky Bernard or Chris Canty. The Giants can rush the passer, and they signed both players. I think that's the key element. And then, of course, you know, the Chiefs. The Chiefs had a decent team. Castle comes in. If he plays better, they've quietly rebuilt their team a little bit with the quarterback, and we'll see what that happens. Anytime a team makes a move on a quarterback, you got to think they've improved.
You mean my 100-1 Kansas City Chiefs?
There you go. There it is.
Did they get anybody other than Castle?
Not really, you know, but they're going to get a top three pick, you know, and they had a good young team. I mean, sometimes, and the fans don't always understand this, sometimes you have to, like, for example, who's the best free agent San Diego can sign? Sean Merriman. He's going to get healthy. San Diego can't do better than Sean Merriman in the free agent market. And sometimes your best players are the ones that are already in the house.
Who had the worst offseason, do you think?
Well, you know, I think that when you look at it, just on paper, you know, you could say Philadelphia's had a bad offseason, but really Philly hasn't lost anybody that you think, oh my, that's really going to hurt them. They can't really overcome that one. You know, Green Bay hasn't done anything, and you wonder what they're thinking about. You know, I don't know if anybody's had an ultimately bad one. I just think things have stayed status quo.
I got to say, Green Bay has been a what-the-hell-are-they-thinking-about team for about 18 months now.
They don't like free agency. They got burnt with Joe Johnson, the defensive end from the New Orleans Saints, and they've just said, you know what, we're not touching it anymore. Mm. And they just stay away from it. And you wonder, can they be good enough? And can they live on drafts? And that's a real issue, because when you draft a player, it's euphoric the day you pick them, but the cold reality is 3 weeks later is he's really not going to make an impact on this team this year.
What'd you think of Owens? Let me guess. You thought it was a desperate move that might not work out.
Yeah. I quoted Bruce Springsteen. You know, sometimes I can't tell my desperation from my courage. I'm not sure it was courageous. I thought it was desperate.
Yeah.
You know, but I can understand. Buffalo's a team that I've misevaluated for a while, especially offensively. I think Roscoe Parrish is a good player, but he doesn't make any plays. He has one touchdown.
Yeah.
You know, I think Lee Evans is one of the best receivers in the league, but they don't make enough plays with him. I think Marshawn Lynch is a really good player, but he only averaged 6.5 yards per reception last year. So there's not enough meat there. Now, Owens comes in, second in the league in drop passes, 49th in the league in yards after the catch. Not really going to make a big difference to him, but perception-wise, he'll be able to get a lot of plays where he's not faced into role coverage, which will certainly help him. The key to Buffalo is going to be they should be after Cutler. You know, they should be stepping up to the plate. You know, there's a team that has a quarterback, but they really don't have a quarterback, do they?
So you're saying maybe trade Trent Edwards, and let's see, what pick do they have? They're in the teens?
Yeah, they should be around 12, 13.
Is that Trent Edwards and a number
Buffalo's
12
11.
And something else?
Buffalo's 11 right in front of them.
So Trent Edwards and the number 11 for Cutler.
Yeah, I mean,
would you do that?
I would be all over that. I think Buffalo is one of those teams that is just not good. It's the Buffalo, like the 76ers, like you write about all the time. They've got a lot of these max contracts, and all they can do is barely get to the playoffs.
Hey, Joe Mead.
Yeah.
Would you trade Trent Edwards in the 11th pick for Jay Cutler?
A year ago, definitely. But I just feel like Jay Cutler, with his whininess, it's starting to grate on me. I don't know if I want him.
All right. There you go. Joe Mead. Lombardi, weirdest offseason. Offseason that you just look at and you say, what the hell is going on there? Not good or bad, just curious.
Cleveland, I'm real curious about. Cleveland's a team that I just really don't understand. I just kind of just scratched my head a little bit. I think the Jets is another one. I mean, people accuse me of being too much of a friend of Belichick's, and I pick on the Jets too much. But the Jets have this huge need at quarterback, and, you know, and they don't have one. And it's going to take a lot of courage to roll the dice at Brett Ratliff. I mean, there are better personnel men than me that will do that.
Why wouldn't the Jets just sign Leftwich?
You know, why wouldn't the Bears sign Leftwich?
How is Leftwich still sitting there? I mean,
Leftwich can't get anybody to even nibble on him. And watch him against Jacksonville when he took over for Big Ben.
Yeah. I was never a huge fan, but I was really impressed with the way he handled himself last year and the way he played when they needed him to play.
I think teams are scared to bring Leftwich in because he's got such dynamic locker room presence that he could turn the locker room around. Why wouldn't Detroit sign him?
Well, because when you have Culpepper, you don't really need to look at QB anymore.
You know, it's just the questions just beg to be, you know, Minnesota, you know, they're another team that you got to scratch your head. Sage is exactly what they have. In terms of what he does, turning the ball over. I mean, you can't get those turnovers out of your head. I mean, if you're working for the Vikings and it's the fourth quarter and you've got a 10-point lead and you've got Sage on the field, tell me you're not going to think about the Colt game again.
Yeah. He's basically Gus Frerotte without the story that where Gus hit his head against the wall and knocked himself. He's basically Gus without that story. And if I'm running Minnesota, all I'm thinking is I want a QB that doesn't turn the ball over and can throw the ball deep and occasionally connect on it. I basically want Trent Dilfer in 1999 or 2000, whatever that year was.
Yeah.
And somebody is not going to screw this up, and I'm going to revolve everything around Peterson. And instead they have this guy who might commit four turnovers each game.
He's like the kid when we were all young that got picked last that always was the first guy to shoot in the pickup game.
I'm going to throw this out for weirdest offseason. The Rams. I don't disagree with what they did. I don't agree with it. It's just, it's weird to me that they really have nobody left. That, I mean, it's basically Steven Jackson and Bulger, who they'll probably waive at some point. But I was very surprised by Torrey Holt. I didn't quite understand that one.
Well, you know, he was making way too much money. He's got an arthritic knee. He wouldn't take a pay cut. You know, he wasn't the same player that the Rams had thought he was. And those problems, and a new coach comes in, he wants to have his guys. Again, it goes back to that, I got to have my guys around me. This is from the old. And it's tough. You know, it goes back to the law of threes. It's a lot easier to get rid of Torrey Holt than try to win him over.
So there's something degeneratively wrong with his knee.
Well, I think it prevents him from being a spectacular player. I mean, his numbers this year were as bad as they were going back to his rookie season. Now, that's not all his fault. I mean, that offensive line couldn't block anybody, and Bulger had no time to throw the ball. So, you know, the stats, you know, you can look around and play with that. But, however, with his age, the knees, the size, the losing a step of speed, you know. But, look, Tennessee really would like to have him. Tennessee almost traded for him. They were very interested in making a deal. He would be a better player for the Titans than he would be as they're trying to rebuild the Rams.
Yeah, and he's also a really good guy, which I don't think you can undersell with stuff like this. Like a veteran guy who's won a Super Bowl and is just a solid chemistry guy. That's the kind of guy you want on your team.
And it's better off for the Rams to move on than to try to convince Torrey that he's, you know, it's tough to tell a player you're not the same guy, so we're going to work around you.
All right, quickly. The top 10, you did a mock draft. Let's see, what day was this? March 14th. So you have Stafford going to the Lions, definitely.
Yes, I think that's a good pick for right now. The Lions still have to go down and work them out, watch them throw. But I think the Lions get it that they know they need a quarterback.
I'm going to say the fans will be excited about that, right?
You would think so. I mean, you would think so. They, you know, the Lions need hope, you know.
Yeah.
You know, as Mickey Rourke said one time, he said, you know, we're in a hopeless situation, but there's still hope. I think that's the Lions.
Okay, so St. Louis Rams picking second?
They can go a lot of different ways here. Aaron Curry, I gave him Eugene Monroe, who I think is a very good left tackle, a perennial Pro Bowl-type athleticism at left tackle. They could go Aaron Curry, who might be the cleanest guy in the draft, should be the second player, can play all three downs. I gave him Eugene Monroe because I don't think you want to watch Alex Barron play left tackle for more than one game.
Well, and that pick makes sense, too, if they got rid of Orlando Pace.
Right. Well, they say they're going to move Alex Barron over there, but, you know, this time of the year, most GMs lie.
My Chiefs at number three.
I think this is a lock of all locks. Aaron Curry's the pick there. They need a linebacker. 10 sacks last year. Couldn't rush the passer. Curry's exactly the kind of guy Scott Pioli's going to want. Character, can do all sorts of things. Can play Mike, can play Sam, could play Will. He could play any linebacker position on the field. He's very good.
And I kind of like that defense now.
Yeah, it starts to get a little better if they can rush.
They just had, because they got Dorsey last year, now you're talking about two blue-chip defensive guys.
Yes.
Along with Jared Allen, who, oh, wait, they traded him.
Yeah, that's right. Because they had a lot of strength in the line, so they traded a 20-game pitcher for a hitting, right?
Yeah.
That's what they did.
Well, you want to get rid of a 26-year-old guy when you're doing a youth movement.
let's build something together, Bill.
Seattle. I don't remember the last time they picked this high. Holy mackerel, number four.
You know, I had them picking B.J. Raji, who's a really good defensive tackle. You know, and then they went and traded for Corey Redding, and they signed Colin Cole. I'm going to go Jason Smith here now on a change because I think they need a left tackle. You know, they need some youth in their offensive line. I think that's where they'll go.
And nothing gets the fans more excited than a left tackle.
Yeah, nothing.
Cleveland at number five. All bets are off, as always, with the Browns.
You know, I think they could easily pick Mark Sanchez here. I've been writing this for the last week and trying to imply nobody's in love with Brady Quinn in the building. His support has left the building. You know, people forget Brady Quinn threw for a 50% completion ratio, and one of those games was against Denver.
What did they give up for him?
Well, they gave up a one the following year. So, you know. Yeah, but, you know, they're rearranging the offices in Cleveland. They've done everything to change the Cleveland pass. This is the Eric Mangini Cleveland Browns. I wouldn't be surprised if they took a quarterback. They need a front seven player, somebody who could rush the passer. They need somebody who can give them speed on defense. I gave him Brian Arapopo. I'm not sure that's the right pick. Everett Brown could be a guy there. I think they could easily go quarterback.
Well, the VP is going to step in right here.
Okay.
I think it's too early to give up on Brady Quinn. I just don't think he played enough. And I still like him. I like the way he carries himself. I'm not willing to write him off yet, especially after all they gave up with him. I just think, is Sanchez really good enough to just say, you know what, we're going to abandon this Brady Quinn thing. We gave him four starts. That's enough.
Yeah. You know, I'm just hearing things out of Cleveland that don't make me feel like Brady Quinn's part of their future.
Did anybody who is now running that team, was any of those people involved with that pick?
No.
Oh, see, that's guys, people love to bring in their own dudes.
Yeah, and that support has left the building. You know, we used to call it at the Raiders sponsorship. When you don't have sponsorship, you're not as good a player.
All right, well then if they're going to have a Brady Quinn discount sale, then where's Minnesota and Tampa Bay?
Minnesota doesn't need a quarterback. The common sense coach needs to understand they don't need a quarterback.
Sage, I forgot. Yeah.
And they got Brad running the offense. So they're
Where is Tampa Bay then?
You know, Tampa Bay, I think Tampa Bay certainly would be, they're looking to try to trade up in the first round. They want to get their guy. Trading for Brady Quinn wouldn't be as appealing to this new era that's going to go on. The face of the franchise is what they call it in Tampa.
These teams are stupid. Well, I'm very excited about these next two because they never disappoint. Cincy at 6 and Oakland at 7.
Well, Cincy will take an offensive lineman if there's one left. I think they could easily take Andre Smith. They need a right or left tackle, so I'm going to give them Andre Smith. The Raiders could take B.J. Raji, who's a very good defensive tackle, who's got a lot of power and strength and explosion. They need a defensive tackle, one of the worst run defenses in the league. Everybody has them picking a receiver. I just don't see that because I sat next to him for 8 years, and there's not a receiver on the board that has confirmed speed. People think 4.48 is fast. At Oakland, he doesn't think that's fast. I see him taking a Mike Wallace, not the 60 Minutes correspondent, but Mike Wallace from Mississippi in the second round before I see him taking a receiver here. So I'd give him B.J. Raji here.
I'm going to make a prediction.
Go ahead.
Because you have Mark Sanchez going 8 to Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he goes below 6. I think somebody will trade up and try to swap picks or whatever because he just seems to me, it seems like he has more value than some of these guys.
I agree, and that's why I gave him to Jacksonville at 8. I mean, people say, why would you do that? Well, you know, there's no backup in Jacksonville, and if you're tired of watching David Garrard play, you say, I'm going to have to make a move. Who do you make a move with?
If I'm Seattle, I'm making a move with San Fran. I'm saying, you give me 10, you give me something else, and we'll give you 4, and you guys can take Mark Sanchez, and you have a quarterback, you have a West Coast guy, your fans are excited. Although, is there a chance they actually think Sean Hill is the answer in San Francisco? Please tell me.
You hear that. I can't believe. I think that's more for the season ticket holders than it is for people that actually know what they're talking about.
My Lord. It seems like San Fran would be the team potentially that would move up for a QB.
They should do everything in their power to get a quarterback. If Bill Walsh were still in the building, there would be no doubt they're getting a quarterback.
And we like Sanchez, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Like him more than Leinart or less?
I like him more than Leinart. I think he's got more accuracy. I think he would have been better served to stay in school another year, but yes, he's very talented.
And you also like this Aaron Maben, this defensive end outside linebacker hybrid. Seems like the type of guy who always does well when he comes into the league.
Yeah, you know, Maben's an interesting guy. He grows on you. He doesn't play with a lot of power. He's very athletic. He's got really long arms. He should have stayed another year in school, came out, you know, but all these teams that are going to a 34, he fits the bill. He's athletic. He can run a little bit, and he can play in space, and he can rush the passer.
So there's no chance he falls to the Pats, right?
No.
Damn it. Could the Pats move up and get him, maybe?
You know, I don't know. He's not Bill's kind of guy, but, I don't know.
Last guy I'm intrigued by, Crabtree. Where do you see him? It seems like he's fallen out of the top 10 because he broke his foot.
I think Crabtree, you know, receivers, first of all, the reason I didn't put him in the top 10 was more for the reality that it's very expensive to pay for a guy with a little bit of an injury, especially in the top 10. Once you get past 10, then it becomes a little easier to pay. You know, San Francisco could use a receiver. I can't imagine that they would pick a receiver with all their other needs at 10. I think Crabtree's really a good football player. I don't think you need the 40 time for Crabtree. My decision to not give him to the Raiders is because unless he can run a time, it's very difficult for that owner to make the pick.
So where does he go then? Could he go to Denver at 12?
He could. Well, I don't think Denver wants to go. They can go to Washington at 13. You know, he could go.
Oh, that's a classic Daniel Snyder move.
Yeah.
Go for the name guy.
Exactly. He could, you know, all those teams don't, you know, San Diego's at 16. The Jets need him at 17. If Crabtree's on the board after 7, look for the Jets to try to trade up to get him.
Washington makes sense. I guess Houston would. And really, anybody after number 10 should be thinking about him, except for the Bills because they have TO.
What happens, quarterbacks and receivers are one of those positions that unless you have an ultimate need, like, New Orleans isn't going to pick a receiver. Houston shouldn't pick a receiver.
Right.
So those teams are target for if a guy slips and you're, say, Chicago, and you want to get him, all you got to do is get to, go to 15 and you got him. The Jets are sitting at 17. We got to go up to get him. We need a receiver.
I like him for the Redskins.
Yeah.
I think that would be exciting. Last thing, Ross Coleman from Sacramento wrote in, is it bad that I have bought into the year of Lombardi so much that I saw something titled Lombardi on the NFL Network and was actually disappointed that it was something about Vince Lombardi and not a new show featuring Mike Lombardi?
I love it.
And that is the greatest testament to the year of Lombardi yet. This guy in Sacramento saw Lombardi on his cable guide and thought it was a Mike Lombardi show.
I love it.
He totally forgot about Vince Lombardi.
I keep telling you, you should be my agent. You've done more for me this year than anyone.
I just like the name Year of Lombardi as a show. And coming up at 6:30, the NFL Network, Year of Lombardi continues.
Yeah, there you go.
That'd be good. All right, well, we'll talk to you. When is the draft?
We've got another month to go. And you got my Sixers in town against the Lakers. They lose by 20. They'll be down 15 at the half. What do you think?
Did you go to the last game at the Spectrum?
No, I did not. I did not.
How come?
Where was I that day? I was doing NFL Network that night. I couldn't go.
How dare you miss the last day at the Spectrum?
For me,
it's a bad job by you.
I know. It would have been great to go see it, but unfortunately, the only seats that I ever saw at the Spectrum were in the triple deck.
My friend Mike Tolan was there and got to introduce his son to World Be Free. So he's on cloud nine right now.
Yeah.
That's
pretty
exciting.
Great memories in that. Saw Bruce Springsteen play in there too. Billy Joel. It was great.
I loved it as well. And there goes my phone, which means it's time to go. We'll talk to you before the draft.
Thanks, Bill. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you. Just a couple emails before we're done. First of all, Ron Silver died, and I was very bummed out because he was one of my favorite. He was originally a that guy, but then I think he became Ron Silver. I first loved him in Silent Rage. He played the mad scientist who brought the robot serial killer back to life. And he's one of those guys that you've just seen over and over again, a lot of stuff. I actually got to meet him. I went to a junket for the movie Ali, the one that Will Smith did, and talked to him for 10 minutes about Silent Rage, and it was really funny. I guarantee I was the first person ever to bring up Silent Rage to him, but I really liked him. And he also gave me a lot of comedy mileage because he was the guy when Fox kept showing, I think it was either the 2004 or 2005 playoffs, Fox was running all those promos for Skin, which was like the district attorney's. The district attorney's son was dating the porn producer's daughter or something, but it had the ad where Ron Silver screamed at the daughter, "Her father is the district attorney!" Or his father, I can't remember. Yeah, it was her father. So it was his son was dating the district attorney's daughter. And anyway, they ran that ad over and over again, and for like just 4 or 5 weeks, I would just get emails with people writing that in capital letters. So anyway, Ron Silver, we're going to miss you. Brett from Philly pointed out something interesting to watch from March Madness that I haven't heard anybody mention yet, and if they did, I just missed it. But so Chester Frazier is a guard at Illinois and broke his hand. He's out. The backup guards include a guy named Jeffrey Jordan, Michael Jordan's son, who might get major minutes in round one. Very exciting. I can't wait to see how this turns out. I'm kind of almost rooting for Illinois now to see what happens there. And speaking of the tournament, tomorrow, Joe House is going to come on. We're going to pick the official BS report bracket, me and him. We're going to go through every region. We're going to do a Sweet 16. We're going to do a Grade 8. We're going to do a Final Four. We're going to do a championship game. We're going to bang it all out. We're going to go on the record. And if it takes 4 or 5 hours, we don't care. We're going to do it for as long as it takes. So stay tuned tomorrow on the BS Report for that. Until then.
Target to sign off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.
And that concludes another episode of the BS Report. And here's 55 more words that Bill Simmons intended to mention, but unfortunately ran out of time. Now you can get any regular piled-high Subway footlong for just $5. The keyword is any. The sweet onion chicken teriyaki, savory chicken and bacon ranch, the meaty, taste-bud-pleasing Italian BMT. All the regular famous Subway footlongs, just $5. Subway, eat fresh. See store for details.